Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Alex, I don't think we're going to see anything between Solo Sikoa and Roman Reigns go haywire tomorrow, but I am enjoying the little windows into the dynamic between the two of them that we got another glimpse of tonight in the final segment on SmackDown, with the Usos certainly having insider knowledge of Solo's personality and what he'll put up with and how he feels about everything. And Solo did not appreciate Roman Reigns laughing at the notion of Solo being the new tribal chief if the Usos beat Roman at Money in the Bank, and then I guess that triggers a vote. I don't know. Let's not think too hard about that. But the Usos said, we're going to vote for Solo to be tribal chief. Reigns laughs hysterically, and Solo looks at him and says, why are you laughing? That's not funny. But then he came to his side to fight, you know, with Roman against Usos afterwards. What do you think about that and the pace at which that will become manifest more into a full-fledged development and not just like a little window into the dynamic between them?
Well, they never explicitly said it was Solo. The crowd did, but anyway.
They looked at him, and I think the Usos looked at him, and that was pretty strong indication that's what they meant.
Yeah, I'm more giving you a hard time. It's clearly Solo. Like, I don't think they're going to rummage up another Uso out of the pile and add him to this.
Right.
So, yeah. The thing about it is I don't think it will really end up mattering tomorrow at all.
Yeah.
But I really like that they're planting that seed for the eventuality. Like, Reigns might not lose for like 2 years, but like so many other things they've done, they can always, like, point back to that. I'll tell you, I think there's, like, four things that could happen in their match tomorrow, and Solo being the one that turns on Reigns is not in that basket. But it is really interesting that they're planting that seed now, and it makes you wonder if, you know, if you're looking at – this is getting way off the beaten path, but if you're looking at WrestleMania 40 – it makes you wonder if it's Cody against Gunter and Reigns against Sikoa.
I know. That's the thing. I mean, I think they are playing long ball. I don't think that this comes into play tomorrow, but it is planting seeds. It's developing this layer dynamic between the two of them. And the fact that Reigns shows What's the word for the body language Reigns showed Solo? I don't think like respect is a word, maybe fear. He gives off the vibe that I know this is someone I don't want to push too hard because I need him on my side, and he's not a pushover, and he's not going to cower in my presence, so I need to manage the situation. And I love that because everybody has a different relationship with each other. I wasn't even able to pay attention to Paul Heyman's response to all that, and that's one of the reasons I go back and rewatch these segments to study each person's reaction. But yeah, that's fun. Again, I'm with you. I don't think it makes a big difference to tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon, I guess, for Money in the Bank. But it is an intriguing dynamic between those two. I thought, you know, Roman standing out there doing most of the talking was really effective. And I mean, all the talking, Heyman and Solo didn't talk. And then the Usos I thought were really good too. I mean, the fans are super behind them. I like that it isn't just a black and white thing of where Reigns is like, oh, I'm done with you guys. You super kicked me. Like, Reigns knows the bloodline is stronger and he is safer if he can manipulate or cajole the Usos into coming back into the fold, falling into line, as WWE said 17 times. But he won't say, he won't like give any ground himself. It's like they have to come in and bow at his feet. Like, of course they're not going to do it. He can't help himself, but to make that the qualification, you have to come in and bow at feet and call me the tribal chief and acknowledge me. They're not going to do that, but it does play into the idea that is maybe delusional or just can't help himself, but to set the bar too high for them to come back. And the Usos are like, you think we want to be tribal chief? We don't want to be. And then they stir some shit with Solo. I mean, I thought everybody played their parts really well there. It's a, kind of a broken record when we say that, but just good body language, crowd's eating it up, and a really good segment. And then, you know, just an all-out brawl, and Coke goes, oh, the Civil War is breaking out tonight, and it's that just classic pro wrestling. The show goes off the air with fans all hyped up, wanting to see an official bell-to-bell match that matters between those two teams. So I thought it was a well-done closing angle.
Yeah, I did too. I didn't have very high expectations for it tonight. I thought it was just going to be kind of a quick back and forth with no real developments. And I guess there really wasn't, but there was kind of the planting the seeds of not only the Sokoa thing, but you brought up, you know, Reigns is willing to forgive them if they acquiesce to his wishes. And this might sound crazy, and I do not think this is going to happen. And Javier kind of stole my thunder a little bit on the flagship this week. But I do think there is a slight chance, and it's very slight, but that Jay actually does return tomorrow. I think that is like the least likely of the scenarios I think could happen. But I do think that's a possibility. And there's a small chance that Roman mentioning that he's willing to forgive them is an opening for that to happen.
So play that out a little bit more. Even though you're framing it as a wild card, low chance happening, you want to introduce that in people's minds. Elaborate on how that fits the storyline and what it would mean and where they would go with it.
Well, what it would do is it would more kind of elongate things more than anything else, because it would set up a situation where, and it kind of couples something I do think is going to happen, but if they all beat down Jimmy, Jay joins with the Bloodline again. Jay can be main event Jay, and maybe you introduce a situation where he ends up United States champion like they teased a few weeks ago or something like that. And then that kind of frees Reigns up to do something non-Bloodline related at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. Say Bobby Lashley, for example. And then Jimmy can come back from injury and wrestle Reigns later, and then they can play the Jay card down the line.
Yeah.
You know, Royal Rumble season, WrestleMania, something like that. Again, it would more elongate things more than anything else, but if they chose to go that direction, I wouldn't be surprised, because they didn't squeeze as much out of this as they could have. If you really think about it, they could have done Reigns Jimmy at this tomorrow, and then they could have done the tag match at SummerSlam, and then they could have done Reigns Jay after that. And they completely decided against that and went right to the tag match. And at this point, I don't know if Reigns against Jimmy one-on-one would sell SummerSlam. So that kind of gets me into what I actually think is going to happen, where I do fully expect Jimmy to be beat down completely and taken out of the equation, which allows, you know, main event Jay to reemerge, and then you get Jay against Roman at SummerSlam.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, every scenario you said is intriguing. I think the last one is more likely. It's crazy with just a small group of people, like four active wrestlers right now. Now that's Sammy and KR out of the picture over at Raw, and I know Heyman's in there, but like the different directions that you can imagine this going that makes sense and the fans would be interested in. And it just comes down to how quickly do they want to play those cards, and how much do they want to milk this as long as they can, because they got a good thing going. I use the Thing in the Rafters example during the Nitro years. It was so good. It was so effective. And they, you know, stretched it out and led a really successful Starrcade. But, you know, you don't want to overdo it, and you got to have something ready to go afterwards. And you know that's on their minds. Not say Sting in the Rafters, but like every promoter does it. They're like, how do we got a good thing going. How do we make it last as long as possible? But we don't want to draw it out so long that we don't take advantage of where the peak moment is. And they just keep finding ways to add you know, logs to the fire and give it extra juice, whatever metaphors I'm going to mix here, to re-energize it and keep things intriguing. And the Usos being together and unified, and I thought this was some of their better mic work that I've seen them do. They're playing well off of Reigns, and they're not buying Reigns's, you know, crap about, you know, because you can't insult them for 2 minutes and then say, but I'll give you another chance. Like, you know, the Usos are given this offer, and they're not even pretending to consider it. It doesn't mean there's not still more twists to come, because the seeds have been planted that Jimmy wanted to be tribal, or that Jimmy was trying to undercut Jay being the chosen tribal chief. And I don't know if that just goes away completely or if that does come into play again. So, and there's scenarios where it could. And I, you know, maybe not. Maybe they don't have that in mind, and it was just for the sake of the swerve at the end to shock people. But that is a card that they can play too.
Yeah, and that kind of goes into, like I said, the slight possibility that Jay actually does want to be the tribal chief. And in order to do that, and Javier kind of said this, but in order to do that, he has to bring Reigns Jimmy's head, and this is his way to do that, you know. So that's possible. The other possibility I want to throw out, again, I also think this is super unlikely, but considering you hate triple threat matches, I would love to point out that there's another possibility that Reigns manipulates this into himself against the Usos in a triple threat, so the Usos have to choose between fighting each other and him at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do not hate triple threat matches. I dislike them as a crutch for committing and getting behind a one-on-one scenario. What I do hate about triple threat matches is the dumb rules. that because there's an added wrestler, we have to say anything goes, just because we can't come up with a more clever way to avoid the notion of somebody getting disqualified and then it becoming a one-on-one match. And so that, I just, you know, but it shorthand is, yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan. But but there's scenarios where it makes sense. You know, I mean, Sabu and Terry Funk and Shane Douglas made sense when it's organic and not a crutch. You know, bring it on, but also change the rules if you can, or, you know, have some semblance of parameters that make some sense. But, yeah, I mean, I don't even know how remote that is. I mean, because you can save one-on-one matches for later, because I do think fancy one-on-one matches is a bigger deal than triple threat matches. So if you can get away with both Usos and Roman, with Solo in the corner of Roman, but is he with Roman, and tease tension there, and maybe Solo's going to help one of the Usos win because he's sick of Roman yelling at him or treating him poorly, and Heyman's trying to manage it. I mean, why not get everybody ringside or in the ring at SummerSlam for a mega bloodline match, just like we're essentially getting tomorrow, but instead of a 2-on-2, it's a 1-on-1-on-1 with the other two at ringside.
Yeah, again, I think that's well out of the realm. Maybe if the next pay-per-view was like, I don't know, whatever the
Backlash.
One after...
Yeah.
SummerSlam is, but
yeah,
I think it's most likely Reigns and Jay, probably with Jimmy like in a wheelchair at ringside or not there or something that they come up with, but they have a lot of options. I also want to point out that you hate the bad rules in a triple threat match, and the best example you could come up with was in a promotion that didn't have any rules.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's true. But at least it was consistent. All right, let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves, and then we'll bring callers onto the show. And also we've got some. We have an on-site correspondent who emailed notes. It's the middle of the night in London, and everybody's getting ready to go to the show tomorrow. So, but I'll read over some of his notes from in the arena earlier today, because this was taped hours ago and aired on delay. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, June 30th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program. I've been covering professional wrestling full-time since 1987, since I was in high school. Well, it wasn't quite full-time right away, but by the time I graduated college, it was a full-time job. And the Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter continues to be published every week. You can catch up on our back issues if you don't have anything else to do for the rest of the year, and start reading thousands of our back issues that are almost thousands that are online, over 1,800 online. With a VIP membership in our back issue section. And you can also catch up on thousands, tens of thousands of hours probably of All right, we are back after unexpected disconnection here. So as I said, you can also go VIP and hear all those retro radio shows from the early 1990s into the mid-90s, and our podcast, which started in 2003, pwtorch.com/govip, full access to that library available with a VIP membership. We also have options through Patreon and just signing up using your Apple account on your iPhone with a click. Check out full details at pwtorch.com/govip. But we are here to talk live about SmackDown with our callers, and the voice you've heard so far, the other voice, is Alex McDonald. He is PWTorch.com's alt perspective TV reporter every Friday night covering SmackDown. You can read his report and my report with our respective analysis and the details that jump out to us at PWTorch.com every Friday night, or catch up over the weekend. And he is also part of the 90s Past Cast with Patrick Moynihan. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Wade. Thank you. On the 90s Past Cast train, I invite everybody to come check that out on PW Torch Daily Cast. Last week, we covered one of my all-time favorite events, the 1993 King of the Ring. I thought it was one of our best episodes. If you're just looking to get into our show for the first time, I recommend that one and also our WrestleMania 9 episode. So many fun things going on behind the scenes in WWF at that time that make those shows really enjoyable. And on the King of the Ring train, I am not alone in loving that show. In real time, Wade Keller himself gave it a 9.0.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a fun show. And by the way, people can subscribe for free to the show you're talking about. Every week, you and Patrick review and discuss Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter back issue on the 30th anniversary of it being published. So you're going back 30 years in wrestling history, and you guys pull out key quotes and news stories and editorial comments, and then also, like you say, watch stuff back and comment on it through the modern lens of 2023. All people have to do to get that show is search PW Torch on their podcast app, and the PW Torch Daily Cast logo shows up. And so hit subscribe. There's a different show each day of the week. So there's going to be 7 different shows in a row, 6 of them not the PW Torch 90s Pathcast, but all good too. So check that out. It is free. If you go VIP, those are also in the VIP feed, but with the ads and plugs edited out for a streamlined listening experience. When you search PW Torch 2, you'll see a charcoal logo with a torch on it. That's our VIP free sample feed. So you can subscribe to that for free, get some free samples of the VIP shows, and also that's the app through which you upgrade to VIP access to all of our podcasts, all the VIP exclusives and the ad-free versions of the other shows. So check that out. That's another portal to getting exclusive content. Alex, anything else you want to mention, or should we just move on to calls?
No, let's get rocking and rolling here.
Cool. So we've got Sean and Kyle on hold, and if you want to join them, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so we're going to begin with Sean in Murfreesboro. And you know what? I think we need some music.
Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. Talking to Sean
in Tennessee. Sean, welcome. Good to talk to you on a Friday night. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
Wade, you always throw me off, man. I love it because I'm like, man, I have so many thoughts. I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna get to wait a little bit. I'm gonna think about them. I'm gonna marinate on them, and then you throw me, which is good though. I like it. You throw me off track. I like it. It's a good thing. It's always good. Talking
I do.
To
I'm
Wade.
Perfect,
Alex. Man, you do. I know.
There's times I make you wait, and there's times I bring you on right away. Sometimes you're right in the middle. But go ahead. Talk to Alex.
Alex, I just want to say, man, it's always good to talk to you, man. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Sean. How are you?
Doing well. Well, I want to get everything in this week because next week I'm actually going to be on vacation, which, Wade, that's why I love being a VIP member, because I can just get everything. I can go back and listen because I won't be able to watch either a lot of the shows next week, so I'm going to have to kind of keep up with reports, and that's why I love having the website. I can go back and read reports. So I'm very thankful for that. And I'm excited about Money in the Bank tomorrow. But it was a good show tonight. It was fun just because of the crowd. And that's what's going to be fun about the show tomorrow night. Like, the crowd's going to be super into it. And that's why the show, I think, is going to be a lot more fun. But tonight's show was good. I wanted to kind of just talk about, the Grayson Waller effect kind of going in and having Logan come out there and speak, which was fine. I mean, the crowd, booed him, which I loved. I thought it was great. I still don't like what they're doing with Grayson. I mean, the segment kind of was what it was, kind of everybody, a few people coming out kind of saying why they're going to win Money in the Bank, whatever. I mean, it was kind of almost a paint-by-numbers type of thing, which was kind of – I kind of liked that they did a triple threat in a way just because, they kind of mixed it up. They did something different that you kind of wouldn't expect. But, they got Butch a win, which is fine. We know he's not going to win Money in the Bank, but it got him something to kind of like, we're at least letting you know we're thinking about him a little bit, even though he has no chance of winning the match. But, again, what do you guys think what they're doing with Grayson? Are they just kind of building him up for something down the line, and they're just like, hey, let's get him a glimpse of what he can do on the mic to when, he gets a chance to do something, they'll kind of, celebrate him then? And what did you think of Logan Paul tonight, and what did you guys think about that segment as a whole?
Yeah, I'll throw to you first, Alex. I mean, it is the parade of wrestlers, but they didn't just talk. Butch is not much into standing there and chatting and taking turns. He tends to be ignite situations into a fight. Did that work for you? And talk about Grayson Waller, also, as Sean brought up, and his role and interacting with Logan Paul, and then LA Knight. Man, there's a lot of talking points coming out of that segment. LA Knight being positioned as a babyface against the heel Logan Paul, and the crowd is eating it up. Don't know if he stays in that slot or not, but certainly I would not want to be a babyface facing LA Knight anytime soon if my goal is to be cheered.
Yeah, Wade, you kind of took some of my thunder because Sean didn't bring up the star of the segment.
Right.
I didn't steal your thunder. I just asked a question, technically. It was just a long question. That made a lot of points. Go ahead.
I feel like Todd Martin right now. or actually, with what's been coming out lately, I should probably say Bruce Mitchell. But anyway, so LA Knight was the star of this whole thing, and I don't know if anybody caught this, but I think the intention was to have Logan Paul give some rub to LA Knight, and it did not work out that way, because if anybody got a rub, it was the other way around. It was Paul from LA Knight, because that guy, this is like the third week in a row where I can't tell if he's getting a huge ovation because the person in the ring is just terrible or if he's that over. Like, he was positioned in this spot with Escobar's, like, ridiculously boring babyface promo either last week or the week before, and Knight's music hits, and it's – I can't tell if he's super over or just saving everyone from their boredom. But in tonight's case, he's saving everyone from the biggest douche on the planet, Logan Paul. So it's one of those situations where it's like he's benefiting from circumstance as much as he's benefiting from his own talent. So he's the star of the segment. Escobar came out, and he has just lost everything that made him cool. Like, Escobar right now went from being this cool, edgy kind of character that could have worked as a babyface, staying that way, to just being a complete cornball, please love me type of character. And it's terrible. You asked about Grayson Waller. And the thing is, a lot of people I really respect on the Torch were saying when he got drafted to SmackDown that this guy's going to be a big deal, and he does this well and does this well and does this well. So I went into it with an open mind because I haven't watched NXT in years. And I've never seen Grayson Waller work, so I have no idea. Like, my introductions to him have been all on SmackDown. And I am ridiculously disappointed, with the exception of the segment he did with Pretty Deadly, which I thought was fantastic. And Waller at this point, like, I don't know. I don't want them to be a tag team, but I want to see him, like, bro out with Austin Theory and just have them both, like, compliment each other on their bodies and how cool they are or something. And just throw that in every once in a while, like they have a little bromance or something like that.
Email that to Todd Martin on The Fix and see if he likes the idea of Austin Theory in the ring with Grayson Waller, admiring each other's and complimenting each other's physique.
I just think would be fantastic. Because
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying I just think it would be a hilarious question for Todd to have to answer.
It would be.
Yeah, I might have to do that this week. But, but at this point, I just want to see Waller in a situation where he's actually the star of the segment and not the backdrop. Because at this point, he may as well be one of the palm trees on the set. And he hasn't wrestled yet. Like, I heard...
He's got a broken leg he's recovering from. And I just talked about that on the Keller Hotline today and read some of the quotes that he had, some of the quotes that he had in a video he put up. And I'll point you towards, if you can find the video, of him talking about the injury, because it shows you an example of what happens when he makes himself the star and the centerpiece as opposed to being in talk show host mode. You can kind of see him amplify and fire up to another level. In doing a heel, a full of bravado heel promo. So I'm going to point you to that a little bit, but I'm sorry to interrupt and not do it more briefly, but there's more to come with him. I'll just say that. And you know, he has been kind of laying low because of the leg injury.
No, that's actually really encouraging to hear, because I was wondering if there was something we didn't know about his situation, because from everything I heard, you know, the guy can work and he's got some potential. So I don't want him, like, positioned right away as a joke and the next Miz if he could be more than that. Not that there's anything wrong with being the Miz, but if he can be a little bit more than that, that would be great. And SmackDown needs it.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you, Alex, about, you know, kind of what I've thought about Grayson, because, you know, I've got to watch NXT a decent amount, and I mean, obviously you can see the mic skills he has. I mean, in the charisma he can have. But in the ring, no, he's very good. I mean, he's had some really good – well, the weird part was they brought him up – when he came into NXT initially, he was like a baby face. Like, oh, the crowd was supposed to be behind him. And he kind of had some of those tendencies, like, kind of weird. But then they turned him heel, so I think he is better overall as a heel. And so you kind of saw some of that. But in the ring, he can definitely go. I mean, when they start – he's able to have matches. Like, he can – I think there's some really good potential for some good matches there. But, yeah, if he's hurt, then, yeah, it's obviously they're doing a good job just kind of masking some of that and letting him just, you know, get his charisma out there a little bit. But, no, I mean, like you said, LA Knight, I mean, I never got to see him a lot in Impact. I never was able to really watch Impact. But, you know, the more I see him on WWE television, it's like, you know, I think there's something there. Yeah, he's not the greatest in the ring, but he's good enough. I mean, even in the little bit of the triple threat, I mean, he looked fine. He looked really good. I liked him. I was like, there's something there with him. I mean, they can make some money for a little while with him if they choose. But I wanted to say real fast, what do you guys think about the Money in the Bank match? Like, you know, do you think it's just between Logan and LA Knight right now? You know, because I think they're the only two, like, likely guys, because I think Logan's going to win most likely just so he can cash in on Seth, because, you know, he lost to him. And I think there's something they can still build on with that. But is there anybody else that they could go with, or do you think those two are the easy just kind of – or does Damian Priest have an outside shot still, even though he wasn't really thought of tonight at all? But, you know, is Logan the obvious choice here to win it?
Yeah, Alex, I've talked quite a bit this week about my different thoughts. Logan is my pick, but I don't know. What do you think?
I picked Logan Paul to win Money in the Bank, like, right after WrestleMania. And then doubled down on it when Seth won the title before he was even involved in the match. So I feel like at this point I have to stick with it just because I've kind of thought that, you know, for the last few months anyway. With that said, I talked earlier about listening to the flagship, and one of the big things that jumped out, because I had not heard anybody else say this yet, besides me, but now you're kind of on the same train, Wade. I think you're right. I think not only is Logan Paul going to win, but I think that might be the opener of the show. And Seth is going to somehow roll up Finn Balor while getting injured, get beat down by Judgment Day, and then Logan Paul is going to cash in and win the title tomorrow too.
Yeah, I am not, this is a soft statement. I'm not ruling out that Logan Paul walks out of Money in the Bank as the WWE champion. I don't know what odds I'd put on it. Don't you know, cash in your IRA and you know, put all your money on it. But I think that's I mean, that's the best scenario I can think of, because I, as popular as LA Knight is, I don't think it's going to help LA Knight to win Money in the Bank, maybe be a babyface officially slotted against heels, and cash in against babyface Seth and win? No. Is he going to cash in against Roman Reigns? Of course not. So does he go after Gunther? He's not ending Gunther's reign. Does he cash in on Austin Theory? Maybe. I mean, that's like the one scenario that would make some sense, or, you know, the only scenario among the major men's titles in on Raw and SmackDown. I guess he could go over to NXT, but I think that's a momentum diversion of things that are going well for him. I also talked about LA Knight's recent interview on the Chris Van Vliet YouTube show on the Wade Keller Hotline earlier today, too, and read some of his quotes and reacted to them, because it was really fun hearing LA Knight, one, talk about kind of confirm my report from last summer that he was essentially about to be fired, and it was the transition from Vince to Triple H that led to him getting a second win. He kind of talked in a careful way, not to throw Vince under the bus or anything like that, but he talked about how he thought he was done, and he didn't know who this Eli, he didn't know who to be in the Maximum of All Models, and then he really, it just feels very natural that this is an amplified part of his personality now as LA Knight. So it was interesting to go through those quotes, and this had snuck up on him, you know, the fans' cheers. He thought it was just one night because he was close to his hometown, and then he talked about how it just kept happening, and it's been really thrilling. They're onto something with him. You know, it was 10 years ago, Daniel Bryan was sneaking up on everybody, and yes, I'm comparing LA Knight to Daniel Bryan, not in terms of in-ring skill, because there's certainly more of a ceiling on LA Knight wrestling match quality-wise, but on the microphone, that bombast and bravado is almost unmatched right now in professional wrestling with him, and he's always had it, going back to being Eli Drake. So I think there's something there, and I think they're still trying to figure it out, but boy, it would be dumb to miss out on, to not try to take advantage of it. And I would say winning Money in the Bank, while it sounds like that'd be a way to give him a boost, I just don't see how they follow up on it without him being diminished, because he's not going to cash in against anybody but Austin Theory. And if you cash in against Theory, it seems like you didn't think you could win one of the two majors titles, and there's not enough of a personal issue there to justify it unless they turn it into one. So that's why I just, you know, even though LA Knight is a lot of people's favorites, I just, as I think it through, I don't think it's good for him, and I don't know what scenario makes the most sense. So, yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Alex?
Yeah, I completely agree. I actually think in this particular scenario, winning Money in the Bank would actually hurt LA Knight more than anything else. You brought up Theory. I actually think that's the next place they're going with him. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you need Money in the Bank to do that.
Right.
Conversely, as far as Logan Paul goes, and it has more to do with Seth and the Roth title picture than anything else. But to me, that brand is so set up to have a heel champion, because everybody on the show is a babyface. And now they're even to the point where they're teasing Damian Priest being a babyface, but there's no heels on the show. Like, outside of Gunter, who's already Intercontinental Champion, there's no viable heel challengers for a world champion. So they kind of screwed up in that sense. And as far as Seth goes, excuse me, who else is on that show for him to wrestle at SummerSlam that feels worth it? And normally you'd say, oh, well, Brock Lesnar or Cody Rhodes. Well, great, because they're going to wrestle each other. So that puts you in a situation where Seth's opponent at SummerSlam is either Dominic, which is fine, or Logan Paul. And with Money in the Bank tomorrow and the guy in the match, Logan Paul as champion with Seth challenging is the most marquee thing they could do. Just connecting the dots.
Sean, your thoughts on what we just had to say?
Yeah, I was nodding my head along with you guys. I agree. I think that's LA Knight having the Money in the Bank. I think I do kind of, the more I think about it, the more I think it's going to hurt him. If him and Theory get together, that's really intriguing to me. I really would like that. I mean, them on the mic could be really fun. And Logan Seth, that's the biggest match they can do right now. There's not a lot out there other than that. So I think that's kind of where they're going too. And I wanted to say, Javier did a fantastic job with you on the flagship. That was really great. I enjoyed that. And Mike Myers, again, thank you for the song. And I miss you, man, on these post shows. I know you can't for different reasons, but we miss you on here. Hope you get back on soon. Two more quick things I was going to bring up was, the first was going back to the women's Money in the Bank, kind of talking about that a little bit. Todd, I love you for bringing up Zoe. You're the only one I've heard that's brought it up, and I was just thankful that it wasn't just me that at least kind of thought of it initially. I wanted to hear what you guys thought about the segment the Bailey Shotzi match was not very good. I mean, Shotzi just isn't very good, and that's unfortunate because I think, you know, there's something there, but she's just not getting up in the ring to really kind of go anywhere with her. But Bailey and Io have been on the same page here lately, which was, I guess, interesting. So do you think that one of them is now definitely going to win the Money in the Bank just because, oh, they're going to throw some tension now with each other again to kind of build that back up again? Or, again, do you think – I know, Wade, you've talked a lot about it, but you can give me your thoughts again too. But, you know, with either Zoe winning to kind of build her up, or are they just going somewhere altogether different? Because I don't know where they're going with Women's Money in the Bank right now. So what do you think about all that? What's the Bailey, yeah, EO and all that? Where do you think they're going with that?
Alex, did anything tonight change your mind from where it was on EO Sky or Bailey winning, one of them versus the other, or either of them compared to the field?
No, as much as I would like it to be Bailey, I just don't think that really works because of the current women's title situation. She's kind of worked with all three of them before, regardless of who comes out of it. I just don't know if that's the direction they go. Unless Bailey wins it by stealing it from Sky and they turn it into some weird angle where they end up wrestling each other for the briefcase or something. That's really the only way I could see that being the case. As far as Zoe Stark goes, I'm sorry. I don't think she has a chance. I think there is a negative percent chance she wins. If one of the three women involved in that storyline win the briefcase, it'll be Trish for zero reason. It won't amount to anything. But if they want to have the first woman fail to cash in, it makes perfect sense that would be Trish in the current character she's playing. If they don't go that direction, I still think the favorite is Io Sky, and tonight was more of a red herring with them being on the same page than anything else. But that's kind of where I stand on it. I think it's probably EO, but outside shot goes to Trish. And then again, if they want it as a storyline device, another outside shot to Bailey, but I don't think anybody else has a realistic chance.
Sean, anything you want to add to that?
No, I mean, I'm definitely intrigued. You know, I think Damage Control, you know, needs to officially go their separate ways in EO. Again, I was always with the option of Bailey, you know, eventually turning back face, because I just think ultimately, I think the fans always wanted to cheer her again, but at the same time, Bailey has just kind of lost something lately. And when you brought up stuff with her for a while, just kind of not seeming as into it as she was. I mean, I was like, well, maybe there's, you know, they're just, you know, building her back up and then things will kind of turn around, but I don't feel like they have. Like, something definitely is missing with her now. And it's really disappointing because as a heel, she was doing so well. And I don't know. She just feels kind of, eh. And EO's got a lot more upside right now. And I think EO should turn face, get face and kind of build to her because there's something there with her. She's so good in the ring. So that's really all I had on that. But one more thing I wanted to bring up, going back to the initial tag team match tonight, I think Pretty Deadly, there's definitely something there with them. I think the match was fine for what it was. I thought it might go a little bit longer, but I mean, it was good. Sami and Kale, I love, you know, the reaction they got. I mean, I just love them. I just think, you know, they're doing even though they've gotten away from the Bloodline, I still think they're in a good spot. Did you guys like the match? Do you think Pretty Deadly still on a good course to do something here soon? And where do you think, you know, Sami and Kale are going from here? So I wanted to hear your kind of thoughts on that match a little bit. And that's all I had. Hopefully I'll call in a couple weeks and I'll, you know, keep up with your reports. But Wade, I appreciate you. Alex, you're one of the best, and I thank you guys for taking my call as always.
Sean, do you mind sharing what your vacation is? What are you doing for fun?
Yeah, so I'm one of my best friends live in Texas, and so I just go down there, try to get down once a year and visit them. And so they are not, Wade, they are, when I say I love wrestling, they, you know, I mean, just laugh at me for fun. Like, they just don't watch it, but they're like, you know, how do you like wrestling? That stuff is so, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, well,
yeah.
That's just what I like. So, no, but I get to enjoy time with them, so it'll kind of take me away, and I won't be able to really – I mean, I'll be able to DVR stuff and go back and watch it after the fact, but it'll be a while. So, but, I mean, like I say, I love hearing you guys' reports and keeping up with everything, so I appreciate that very much too.
Well, you just tell them that being a wrestling fan and calling into these shows led to you having your own entrance music, your own jingle. That'll sum
I'll up. Do that. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
you guys.
John.
I will, for sure. Appreciate it.
Safe travel. Yeah, so KO and Sammy against Pretty Deadly. Yes, formulaic, Alex, was a good word to use in your report for this. Very much just WWE formula. It was fine with me. It was not booked and presented and intended to be some sort of 4.5-star match of the year. I think what stands out more is just how quickly Pretty Deadly have lost. And does that mean this is just sort of a short-term one-off and they got something else planned for them, or are Pretty Deadly going to get their heat back and they're going to forward this? Like, what? So talk about the match and the presentation of it, but also what do you think it indicates about what's next for Sammy and KO and Pretty Deadly?
Well, on the Pretty Deadly train, all I have to say is, yes, boy, they're great, man. They are fantastic. I love everything they've been doing. And that's like the most disappointed I've been in a while for there not to be like a random title change. So on the Pretty Deadly train, there's nowhere to go but up for them. I wouldn't put too much stock into them losing. I think the bigger thing there is kind of what the problem is, and it's more of a Sammy and KO problem, where they beat the Usos and they were both positioned as like main event caliber wrestlers. So you're in this weird situation now where they ended this really long historic reign and there's not another tag team to that level that they could believably lose to. So it's almost like they don't need the titles. And honestly, I don't know if the tag team division needs them. We have more teams than we've had in a really long time. And I think the division itself could kind of, you know, operate of its own volition at this point. I don't think we necessarily need the super, you know, two singles guys put together team. But I don't know what you do with Sammy and Owens, because they've been booked so strong that what are they going to do, lose to the Viking Raiders? Like, there's no, like, they can't do that. There's like nowhere for them to go right now, and there's no viable team on the rise other than Pretty Deadly that would even make any sense, and they just dispatched to them tonight in, what, 12 minutes. So, I don't know. They're going to have to do an injury angle or something like that. I kind of thought that's where they were going tonight with the Owens ankle injury that would give them an out and let Pretty Deadly win the titles, but I don't know what you do with Sammy and Owens, and honestly, I think they'd be better off being in the singles division because of the fact that we talked about Raw before. They really need a couple more guys that are of high caliber to compete for that new title, and I think both of them could fit that bill really nicely.
Yeah, I saw you wrote that, and it is true, and there's I don't have answers to my own questions, so I'm open to ideas. All right, let's not leave Kyle waiting any longer here. Kyle from Baltimore is up next. Kyle, thank you for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Charlotte, Asuka, Bianca's situation, and it's like for me, I was watching this. I was thinking in terms of, okay, this is kind of figure it's going to be a triple threat match. I'm thinking now it's going to be a triple threat match for SummerSlam. First, I thought it was going to be the type of one-on-one match with Charlotte and Bianca, but now it's clearly a triple threat match for SummerSlam. But it feels like to me that Asuka feels like the third wheel. Asuka doesn't feel important as champion still again. I don't know why they continue putting the title on Asuka when she doesn't feel important. When it's not really about her at all. It's about Charlotte and Bianca at this point. And it's like, to me, that's what they're focusing on, and Asuka is just there. So we just think about just them continuing putting the title on Asuka, but she's not the clear-cut person that they're focusing on. She feels like the third wheel in the other two women that they're focusing on, like Charlotte and Bianca. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, Alex, I did not like Bianca Belair interfering and ruining a match and Cole being sort of agnostic about it. I think if you have a world title match and you've hyped it and somebody ruins it, face or heel, whatever the circumstances, the job of the announcer is not to protect anyone storyline-wise, but to be outraged that a match people are looking forward to ended in such a cheap way. I did not like that finish. Asuka is a third wheel, and she's not going to stand there and be able to hold court for 8 minutes cutting a centerpiece promo. When they utilize her, they're challenged to go outside the normal formula to do so, and they try to find creative ways to do it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, she's the third wheel, but she's, you know, a highly respected worker, and they want to include her in top storylines on occasion. And, you know, she's obviously in a spot where she has to be in big matches right now. Tell me what you thought of that segment. What was good? What was bad? What was the ratio?
I'm going to kind of answer your question with a question to start, but did it bother you more that the interference happened and ruined the world title match that they had hyped, or that what we got preceding the interference was 4 minutes of a bunch of sloppy nothingness?
I know. I was more bothered by the finish because that's more in their control, but it isn't a good sign if you can't have a good 4 minutes with Asuka. And I don't know if that's ring rust or just a bad night or what was going on, but it didn't seem like, I mean, to my eye, and I'd have to rewatch and get a second opinion through a wrestler's eye to be more firm on it, but it just seemed like Charlotte wasn't quite there. She wasn't on tonight. Did you pick up anything in terms of what you thought went wrong?
Well, they awkwardly collided into each other in the corner, and then they went, from what I assume, is retrying the same spot in the opposite corner, and it didn't work again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they had the awkward, like, pin, but she's in the ropes, and then pull her out and pin her again. Like, that was how they were recovering from the awkwardness of what had just occurred the two spots previous. And then, of course, the Charlotte come off the outside with my moonsault and I lightly brushed you with my hand and now you're dead thing. It was just, the whole thing was just a mess. Like, I clocked it at 8 minutes with the commercial break, but we probably only got 4 or 5 of actual TV time. But that was just bad. And I kind of had a feeling we were getting a nothing finish when I saw what time it was and knew we still had the Bloodline segment to come. But I made the assumption that we would get, like, a good 10 or 11-minute match, and then, you know, something would happen with Bianca. And I also thought it would be more overt. Like, I thought she'd get misted or something. Mm-hmm. Just something more than the Asuka moved and she got kicked in the face. And then Bianca looks like an idiot because she attacked Asuka first, who didn't do anything to her.
Yep.
The whole thing was just a mess. And it... It's really a shame because the last, like, 3 weeks or so, I thought Belair has been great. And her attacking both women and standing over them at the end is the type of attitude that I want her to have. But I want her to have a better reason for doing it. Like, her reason for being upset in the first place is totally valid because every single person who's ever had a job has had this happen to them in some way or form. So it's really relatable, you know, that she got passed over for somebody else for whatever reason. But the way they went about it tonight, like, really undercut what they've worked on the last 3 weeks or so.
Yeah. I don't think they know how to book Bianca Belair. I don't think they have a clear idea of how they want to book Charlotte. And I think they feel they don't have as many options as they do with most talent with Asuka. I did not like this segment at all. It didn't make me more interested in the women's title or the women's title match or Charlotte or Bianca or Asuka. Just a bad situation all around. Well, Sean or Kyle, excuse me, I'll throw it back to you for any follow-up on that, and especially if we didn't address anything you wanted us to.
I just feel like that this is just, I just think that this... It is about Charlotte and Bianca, and Asuka needs to really lose the championship. And I don't know if it's based off if Io wins the briefcase tomorrow. I know they've been teased the Bayley and tease again tonight, and I was like, okay, that's nice. And it's like, but then I don't know. It just feels like to me anyone from SmackDown win the briefcase, even if it is EO, which will be nice and all. But I just feel like I don't know how they're going to play that up. But if with her with the briefcase, with her also not speaking that much English, and if they're going to have EO and Bayley break up, you know, they got to try to have EO by herself to cut promos. That's going to be interesting. So I don't know how that's going to work. That's why I'm still thinking, hoping to be Becky. I think also being a little bit biased because I'll be on there on Raw, so to see her with Brikas would be fun. But whatever. But I guess we'll see with that. But I think what I'm really ready to get into is Austin Theory. Austin Theory, I have no idea why he is still the United States champion. It's really sad because I think Theory is really good in the ring and everything like that. But he hasn't really done anything since WrestleMania. He's just out there, doing nothing. I just want him to be, you know. And also AJ Styles as well. He's busy with Karrion Kross, which whatever. But I feel like that if you want to make AJ Styles and AJ Styles into something interesting again, have him face Austin Theory, not Karrion Kross, I think. So what do you think about what's really next for Theory and his next title defense or challenger, because he just feels so not important. Same with AJ's. I think AJ should be focused on Theory and not on Karrion Kross. What do you think about that whole situation with the Nick Carter title situation?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm glad Austin Theory got a win. Ridge Holland is, obviously they don't have super high hopes for him. He's just sort of a Luke Gallows in the OC type level guy, a big guy. You can throw him in there, but if he loses, it's not like they're derailing someone they have high hopes for at this point. And if he gets better and they decide that he's worth investing in, wrestling fans' memories, I wouldn't say they're short, but they will accept somebody who wasn't a top person if suddenly they catch fire. So this was a good person for Theory to get a win on. He needed a win. But, right now they're promoting Money in the Bank. They're not going to spend a bunch of TV time on people who they are not building up, a major match or a major feud with. I don't think it is a sign that they're losing interest in them. I think they just kind of rotate who gets a bunch of TV time. As far as the other topic, Karrion Kross cutting his little vignette and AJ Styles, actually a babyface calling out a heel for cheating, not winning fair. Like, I like that. I'd like to see more of it. I liked Wade Barrett saying, here in the UK, we like rules and order and lodge. I was like, yeah, I gotta go visit there. even if his commentary isn't always logical. I did like AJ just going, yeah, I'll accept your challenge and I'll beat you one-on-one. You beat me in three moves. So it was both situations were interesting and I thought worked well enough. Theory against Sheamus works for me. If Sheamus, ultimately wins that feud, great. If Theory survives it, fine. It'll be a good test of of where they both are, and hopefully they can have better chemistry than like Asuka and Charlotte. Well, who couldn't? Anyway, Alex, I'll throw to you. Any thoughts on either of those two kind of main topics?
On the Theory train, first of all, he's awesome. Wade's right though. He's just not involved right now. He has a match with Sheamus next week. Hopefully. If I was in their position, I'd have him win clean. The way Theory won tonight is what they should be doing with him all the time. He found a weakness of the opponent and just beat the guy clean.
Ruthlessly exploited the weakness.
And that's kind of – I've mentioned on the show before that Theory needs to be booked more like young Triple H in like that 99 kind of breakout year as opposed to the Honky Tonk Man. And I think we saw part of what he could be tonight if they went that direction. I would really like to see them continue that next week with Sheamus. As far as Kross and AJ go, Kross is super interesting in those backstage promos. And then he has an awesome entrance and then the bell rings and I stop caring. So that's kind of where I am with him. And it's interesting because we're talking about Theory. And I have a feeling they're going with him and L.A. Knight down the road if they're going to turn L.A. Knight face and that may even be your SummerSlam U.S. title match. But they hyped Edge's return for next week, and the two people that make the most sense for Edge right now are Theory and Karrion Kross. So I would imagine one of the two of them gets involved in that segment somehow, or get involved with Edge somehow in the next week or two to set up something between them. Again, I would bet Theory's kind of headed towards LA Knight and Kross with Edge, but if Kross gets beat by AJ in, like, you know, 5 minutes, then I don't know if you can necessarily do that. But we'll see. I do think Edge is going to add a wrinkle to the whole situation, though.
Yeah, no, that absolutely is a talking point. You know, what is his purpose when he comes back? Where do they drop him into? And can we look at what happened tonight and extrapolate or predict anything from that? Some good theories there. Kyle, back to you. What else is on your mind?
I forgot about that, to say Edge is going to be back. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Edge is going to be doing for next – what's next week, right? Right, so yeah. So I guess the final thing I was to talk about is the I guess the whole Bloodline stuff. It was good enough. The ending of the show was good, and all of us. But I was watching this try to really speak to myself too, because also too, one of the things too also made that I was kind of shocked over is that they said that Dominic and Cody Rhodes going to be in the main event. So is it really because is it going to have Brock? Is it really because solely because Brock Lesnar's the main event? I guess that's the reason. Because why they're doing this in the main event? But how do you feel about and if since that's the main event, what do you think the tag team match is going to be put on? Is it going to be the second match or the first match of the show?
What a weird comment, Alex. Like, to classify Dominic as Dominic Cody as the main event. It's not. It shouldn't be the last match. I mean, either Seth and Balor should be, or one of the Money in the Bank matches should be, or I think most likely the Bloodline is. I don't. Was Cole being sarcastic? What is going on here?
Well, Cody is going to be hyped as a main event on every show he's on. He could wrestle one of the three of us and he would be announced as the main event. I think it's more that than anything else. But no, I don't think there's a chance that goes on tomorrow. I would assume that is... I actually, now that you asked that question, I don't know where you put that. Because you probably do the men's Money in the Bank first.
Yep.
The Bloodline's probably the last. Seth and Finn is probably like third or fourth. And then the women's Money in the Bank is probably third to last or second to last. So where do you put that?
So it all depends on the match finishes. You know, I mean, the match finishes, the ebb and flow of the show, which matches are longer, which are shorter, babyfaces going over versus heels. They put all – when it's not obvious, it's more of an ensemble show, a lot of things factor into it. But not having that knowledge or only educated hunches, I do think men's Money in the Bank kicks things off. I think you do Rousey and Baszler against Liv and Raquel second as a sort of padding. I think then you could do Cody Dominic, and then you could do women's Money in the Bank or flip them. Gunther Riddle honestly could be anywhere on the show from the opening match to the second to last. I don't really have a strong feeling on that. That again comes down to how long is the match, who's winning, is there an angle and an outcome? Because if there's non-finishes, they like to spread them out. If there's interference, they want to spread them out. If it's a babyface losing, they want to spread that out. So that I think is a utility match that can go just about anywhere. I would do Seth Balor. I know there's sort of the belief that the opening match is prestigious, but I think there's baggage on that from the old world title days with Alberto Del Rio and, you know, the secondary world championship goes on first. I mean, there's part of me that would just take this opportunity to put Seth on last, even if it's not good for the show, because people are going to care more about the Bloodline. It might put them in a, quote, losing position. At some point, you got to close out a pay-per-view with that match. You want, as often as you can, you want Seth defending last. but it's the bloodline, and I think that does go on last. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts. But again, I can't have too much firm certitude about what's right without knowing match length, match finish, match outcome.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I forgot about Gunter and Riddle. That'll probably be right before the bloodline match. That's probably second to last. Because that'll probably be a bridge between Money in the Bank or Cody Dominic and the main event. So that actually makes sense. I cannot get behind Seth main eventing a show when his opponent is Finn Balor, and I think that Logan Paul is going to cash in. I have no interest in that.
That's true, yeah. All right, Kyle, anything else quick you want to get in before we move on?
Oh, yeah, I really don't want to see that. Logan will cash in on Seth. I'll be really sad. But anyway, I think the last thing I just want to say is that who I wanted to see win the briefcase really is going to be depending on what they do with Rhea Ripley at the end of the day. Who's Rhea is going to be that next opponent? That's going to be determined who's going to win the briefcase, I think, in my eyes. So we'll see what happens, but that's the short call.
Cool. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it. All right, we have a non-identified number here, but we'll try this. If you are on hold, state your name and where you're calling from. So we don't know what that was. But we'll move on here to our next caller. Up next is Brad from New York. Or formerly New York. Where are you now, Brad? Sorry.
Florida, man. How you doing?
Good, good. What'd you say?
Florida.
Florida, he's asking.
The Sunshine State. The Sunshine State.
Yeah.
I got 98 degrees and humidity and everything, but it's really nice here from, you know, like September through May, so it's great.
Cool.
What's gonna call it? The main event is Cole didn't, and Kyle, if you're still listening, Cole said you're getting this big main event match. I think he just meant like main event type match, like, you know.
Yeah.
It could be, but it's not. The first match is going to be the men's Money in the Bank, and the bloodline is going to be the last one. And that's the way I follow this
I think
guy on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I follow this like locked account on Twitter, who's clearly someone who works either backstage or whatever, and he's been right about everything for a year and whatever. So that's what he just said. So definitely that's the way it's going down. But I have to ask you guys, and Alex would be so good on this, and you will not find a bigger Grayson Waller fan anywhere than me. Like honestly, like I loved him in NXT. I used to, just be glued to everything and anything that he did, everything. Like, his matches, like, every big match he was in, I was so excited about it. And I absolutely hate what they're doing with him. I absolutely hate it. They're giving you absolutely no reason to embrace this guy in any way, even as a heel. They're giving you nothing other than this is a guy who's basically running segments, and there's not even any sort of hint of him being a wrestler. It's almost like he's like when Miz was, and I don't even like the Miz comparisons because I think Miz is great and all, and he's had an amazing run that many wrestlers would be envious of, but it's almost like when Miz like hosted SmackDown. He was like the host. Like it almost seems like that or like even less than that. Like, it's just so weird, man. Like, there's no hint of a feud. There's no hint of him getting involved in anything other than
Brad,
the posting.
I don't know if you're listening, but I did mention that he is recovering from a broken leg that he suffered in his last NXT match. So I would just expect there to be a pretty sharp shift in how he's presented soon because I think he's close to being able to be back in action.
Wow. Wade, I did not hear you say that. I'm so sorry. I was watching SmackDown on delay. But if that's the case, why not come out there and say, like, why can't they, like, is it such a harm to say, I broke my leg in my last match with Carmelo Hayes, but I'm here to host and I'm here to get involved with everything on SmackDown. And then when I'm ready, you're going to see me in the ring and you're going to see me kicking ass and you're going to see me doing this. You know what I mean? Like, Because I think now a lot of people don't even understand what this is. You know what I mean? I appreciate that report.
I agree.
But I wish that would be obvious to everyone else, you know?
I agree. I don't think you're not alone in feeling that way. Alex talked about it earlier, that you're all this hype about him and he's disappointed by him. I don't think it's long-term damage, but I think it's something short-term they need to fix. I am reasonably confident he's going to be able to talk his way into making people forget that he spent a couple months hosting segments and not really standing out all that much. I think the idea is they want to give him TV time and orient people towards what he's all about, but you're not really getting a chance to see what he's all about yet.
Yeah. No, thank you guys. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry to be repetitive with that. I'm finding myself very sympathetic towards Roman. Like, I know you're not supposed to feel that way, or are you? I don't know, but it reminds me of, like, I used to work for this company, and there was this guy who ran, like, a big division there. His name was Mitch. And one by one, like, the guys on his team, like, kept leaving and leaving and leaving. And, like, he was kind of like a jerk to everyone always. But, like, once he was down to, like, two people left on this team that he ran, he kind of started like kissing their butts and being like, hey, you know, you want to go out to lunch? You know, like the guys on the team, like he was kind of like, you know, sort of trying to ingratiate himself to them. And I'm not saying Roman's trying to ingratiate himself to Solo, because clearly he was not, by calling himself the only one tonight or Paul Heyman, but it's almost making me just feel like a little bit sorry for him rather than like, oh, like this is cool. Like I'm watching this real jerk, like get, you know, lose people one by one, because he really has been the one that's gotten turned on every time. I just want your opinion. Like, do you think they're trying to go with the angle, like where you start to actually feel sorry for him in a certain way, or are they, is that just me just feeling that way?
I don't think they're going for that. I think they want him to seem brave on the outside, but more brittle than he would ever admit. And, vulnerable and nervous, especially when it comes to Solo, and too small and shallow and arrogant and all the things he said people are thinking about him, because he's self-aware in that respect, to welcome the Usos back with any suggestion that he had a role in why they chose the side that they did. I don't think there's, at this stage, any undercurrent of sympathy we're supposed to feel for him, because I think we're a ways away from him being in a new place. And I just don't think the Usos have come across as negative, and I think Solo is someone who fans are cheering when Solo side-eyes Roman, laughing at the notion of Solo being the tribal chief. Alex, what do you think?
I don't think at all that they want you to feel sorry for Reigns. That might be kind of a circumstance, because it is true. I mean, I'm biased, but I look at the situation and say, well, you know, it's all you guys that don't want to be a part of this dominant faction. It has nothing to do with anything Reigns has done. You know, you guys just made this decision on your own. But no, I don't think they're going for that at all. I think the idea is that Reigns is such a narcissist that he pushes everybody away, so you can't stand to be around him. And I think they're playing on that more than anything else. But again, I'll bring up the slight possibility that a swerve is coming and somebody wants to be with him more than we know. But other than that, no, it's leading to everything crumbling down around him, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Brad, what else?
Alex, I'm sorry. On my last point, can you elaborate on like maybe even just a scenario that you think that might be? Because that's like super interesting. I'm just curious as to like what that might
Brad,
be.
Brad, for the sake of all the other listeners, I'll just point you to re-listen to the replay, because Alex did spend a good amount of time detailing that.
My bad. All right. So my last thing is on Shotzi, and I know it's like kind of super unimportant, but with her getting her hair cut off, which is like just weird, I don't know. Do you think she comes back as a new character with short hair, or just like a different, you know, oh, this is a new Shotzi, like, is that kind of why you think they did the hair cutting off thing, or was it just Bailey? Hey, she's despicable, and that's why she did it.
Alex, what do you think?
Is she going to come back as a better wrestler? Because if not, I'm not interested. Like, the last like three Shotzi matches I've seen, looked like something I would expect to see at a local indie show. I paid $4 for it. Like, she's terrible. I don't even mean that to be mean, but, like, she has no business being on television at this point. Because once you can blame it on her opponent or something, but when it's two or three times, it's clearly you. Like, you're the common denominator. And she's just not getting any better. And she's just not worth putting any stock into at this point. If that's what they're going to do, maybe it's a second chance. I think it's more likely going to be a trophy for Bayley to carry around because she didn't cut off that much.
Yeah.
If they had gone a little further, then I'd be more inclined to think that it's a character change for Shotzi. But considering what she cut off, like a strip of it, I assume that nobody will even notice because that's probably not her hair anyway. And Bayley will just carry it around.
Yeah, I have nothing to say on it. I don't know. I'd just be rambling. I don't know what they're doing with the hair cutting and what that means for Shotzi. I have no conjecture or guesses. It doesn't seem obvious to me either way.
Yeah. No, thank you guys. I'm sorry if I reiterate or brought up some things that you guys have already talked about, but no, I appreciate you taking the call and thanks for the time.
Yeah, I was good to hear from you, Brad. Don't worry about it. All right, we'll go to Jeremy in Columbus, Ohio next. Jeremy, good to hear from you. What stood out on SmackDown for you tonight?
Just kind of a thought I just had from the last caller. Has there ever been a hair versus hair women's match before? Because that would be the only thing that makes this feud interesting.
Whoops. Alex, any jump to your mind right away?
I do know of a situation where, and I actually think Todd talked about this recently, where a specific wrestler put his wife's hair on the line, and she lost and got her hair shaved. I would imagine there has been, but I don't know if it's been, you know, like a major promotion like WWF, WCW, ECW, something like that.
Obviously, that would be a draw if they were to do that, because people would be like, oh, my God, somebody's going to end up bald. I feel like there's something I'm missing.
I'm sorry. I got one.
Yeah.
Victoria beat Molly Holly and cut her hair.
I was just about to bring up Molly Holly, and I was trying to think of where it was, where she ended up bald. So, so that comes to mind. In fact, I'm Googling this now. There was a Mandy Rose Sonya Deville hair match that pops up.
Yeah, that didn't count though. Like, Mandy Rose just got a haircut and it actually looked better.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That came up on the Google search trying to spark some memories. I knew there's something more recent where it was billed, but I was like, nobody ended up bald, so why am I not remembering this? So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, maybe they could go that direction. Maybe that's the beginning of it, Jeremy, that, and then Shotzi ends up bald. Or Bayley, I don't know. Yeah.
My question is, so I've seen a lot, or I've seen some, like, pushback and flack about the way they did the type of match Theory and Ridge had tonight. I forget what they call it. Champions contender match or something?
Did they call it that? I even missed that, yeah.
I'm not sure. I may be wrong on that, but...
Well, the framework of it is if you never explained it, but if you beat the champion, you're going to get a title shot or you move up the ranks. They're not really explicit about it, but if you lose, then it's a setback. So in other words, it's a non-title match. It's what non-title matches have always been. But I guess their argument, if I were to get into their heads for this, one, they think non-title sounds like you're taking something away or it's less than. But I think what they're saying is this isn't just a match where the title's not on the line. A championship contenders match is a match where the opponent of the champion is, say, in the top 10. And so if they win, they earn a title shot or earn strong consideration for it or something like that. But they just don't want to explain it because they don't want to be held to it. And maybe they haven't even thought as much about it as we're talking about it here. Alex, what do you think?
Well, as much as you tried to mental gymnastics your way into making that make sense,
yeah,
there's one major issue. Shouldn't you move up the ranks every time you win, regardless of who you beat?
Yeah.
So why should it matter what the thing is called? Like, it's so I wish I could remember if this is actually on the show or not, but I tried to explain what this was to Patrick like 3 weeks ago, because we were talking about championship contender versus AEW does like eliminator, right? It's a similar concept.
Yes, it is. Yep. Which they also don't explain.
I was trying to explain what this was, and he was trying to explain the eliminator thing to me. Again, I wish I could remember if it's actually on the show or not, but it was a fun conversation. So it's funny
to
bring this up.
That's hilarious that you two would explain this poorly, the same thing, essentially, poorly explained by each company, never explained really by each company, but not obvious to figure out. And they each have their name for it, and they both are equally guilty, and you each would have trouble explaining or even trying to come up with whether it's the same thing with a different name or not.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what the conversation was whether or not it's the same thing or not.
That's great. That's great. All right, Jeremy, back to you.
Pretty much everything else I wanted to talk about has been said. The last thing I'll say is I'm a blue-collar guy, and every blue moon when I see the Good Brothers pop up on my TV screen, and no way am I saying I could ever do what they do, but I can't help but wonder how much they're getting paid to do what they actually do. That's all I got to say. Thanks for taking my call. Love the shows.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good to hear from you again. So speaking of that, up on pwtorch.com, we posted our on-site report from Arjan Pathak. I probably butchered the pronunciation of his name, but his report is up at pwtorch.com, so I encourage everybody to check it out. But the the warm-up match, the LWO beat the OC, Anderson and Gallows, before SmackDown went on the air. So that's the role they're in, you know, just non-televised warm-up matches at this point. I mean, I don't want to take away from what Gallus and Anderson have done to get to where they are, but you know, there is their reputation, and I'm not saying it's been consistently this or it's totally fair, is they kind of walk around like they've earned their jobs and they're sort of content with where they are. I don't know. I mean, I think there's more talent there to exploit, but they are a second tier or third tier tag team, but they're friends with AJ. And, you know, I think AJ has even had some issues with Paul Heyman over Anderson and Gallows and their usage and stuff. But I don't know, Alex, do you have any thoughts on the OC?
I would rather AJ just be by himself. Like, yeah. I get why they're there and AJ has a little bit of clout at this point, but it's so overt and obvious that they are literally there to hang out with him.
I know.
Like,
yep.
It's like, you know what they are? They're the modern-day Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Yeah, total good comparison right out of the 90s Fastcast, right?
Yeah, like they literally have a job to be friends with this guy. Like, that's it.
Yep.
And I don't think they'll ever amount to much more than that, and it's fine. It would work better if AJ was like a heel, like, U.S. champion or something. But other than that, there's no use for them. They could, though. I mean, the best they could be is, I mentioned before, I think the tag division is to the point where it could sustain itself with real teams right now. So they could be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, them doing, like, a month feud with Pretty Deadly would be fine with me. But that's about it. That's about as high as they're going to go.
I'll hit on some other notes here in our on-site correspondence segment. Normally, obviously, people call in and speak firsthand, but the timing didn't work out with this being the middle of the night in the UK. Sammy and Kiro got the biggest pop of the night. They were the first out, so they got that benefit. And then LA Knight got there were not only a big pop when he came out, but there were chants throughout until he showed up. So people were pre-chanting for him. And then Roman Reigns got everyone standing when he came out, but not much cheering or booing. Just, we want to see him in person. And so people were standing. So that's interesting. Also, the Usos and Logan Paul were booed a lot. Wade Barrett got a nice pop when he entered. And Bayley got her usual British chants. The attendance, he said, was packed all the way up to the 400 level. And he said there's a good view from every spot. Demographically, he said 55% men, 40% women, 5% kids, mainly boys. Most of the adults are 25 plus. The kids were 11 or younger. So the 12 to 24 age group, not WB strength in London. Interesting. He said, I didn't see many teenagers or university students. I mentioned the LWOB to OC beforehand. The two dark matches were Sheamus over in Austin Theory and Karrion Kross and AJ Styles. Interestingly, the two matches that they promoted on SmackDown for future episodes were given to the fans as bonus matches. He did not stay around for those. So we don't know the outcome. And then let's see what else he said. He said the show flew by really fast because there weren't a lot of video packages. So they may have filmed this, not live to tape, but just straight through. And then in post, just, you know, inserted the video packages and stuff too. That's certainly possible. So those are off-site notes. Anything jump out to you there, Alex?
No, you didn't bring up what he paid for his tickets, but it's actually super reasonable for both nights. He said he'll be at Money in the Bank tomorrow too.
Yeah. He said, he talked about t-shirts being $45 each and it's more than he'd prefer to pay, but he thinks it's reasonable. And he paid $380 for both SmackDown and Money in the Bank and a combo ticket, got the same seat for both nights. And that is quite reasonable, compared to some ticket prices for, WWE and AEW premium shows these days. All right. So let's go to some email before we, wrap up here. And we'll go to Chris from Oklahoma, VIP member. He said, I must say this story has more curves than anything regarding the idea of Soho being the tribal chief. The idea of all three brothers turning on Roman is interesting to me and how they will work it all out. Alex, where are you on Solo? And is Solo being tribal chief a scenario that you can conjure up as a scenario that seems somewhat plausible with as part of the Roman Reigns babyface turn where like Heyman is on Solo's side and he actually does get named the tribal chief. And does that shake out or does Solo become a tribal chief while Reigns is still a heel and that's Solo going babyface? I think the first scenario is more likely and they'll use Solo to turn Roman face. And then they'll use a Solo Reigns feud to try to elevate Solo. Solo's rep is good from what I hear specifically behind the scenes for people. Just a good family man, reliable. They like him. They like his acting, his body language. Obviously promos is something they've leaned on him a lot for. I don't think they're too worried about that. And in the ring, he's solid. So, they certainly have him on, the intended course is for him to end up being a big star. They're going to give him a shot. What do you think the path is for him?
Solo is without a doubt. The next big time heel, probably usurping Reigns at some point. How they get there, I'm not really sure. But if somebody asked me to put money on who's going to end Reigns' winning streak and take the title, that's who I would pick. The only other person I would even throw in slight consideration for at this point would be if somehow that falls through for some weird reason. And Reigns ends up a face and loses to Gunter. Other than that, I don't think there's really anybody else. Again, most likely I think it'll be Solo that ends in a situation where he's a dominant champion, Reigns goes away for a while and comes back as a face. Even if he's a face before that, I think that's kind of where this all ends up eventually. Solo's big time, man. I've said before, I truly believe that in the next 3 to 5 years, he's probably, if he's not number one, he's number two or three biggest star in the company. If you're picking people right now to start a promotion with, he would be very near the top of my list.
Very good. We'll go to Azan in St. Louis next. He says, good evening, Wade and Alex. Great build for Money in the Bank all around tonight. Do you agree with that, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. There was nothing about this show that turned me off from anything on the show tomorrow, so that's a positive. I do like that they did the obligatory guy who's not going to win standing on the ladder with the briefcase with a guy who I already knew wasn't going to win, so it didn't ruin anything.
yes, exactly. Cool. Yep.
The Bloodline stuff was really good, but otherwise, with the exception of the Bloodline stuff, and even that's pushing that kind of far, I think this is just a situation where if you were going to watch this show anyway, tonight didn't really put you over the edge one way or the other.
Yeah, I thought it was solid build. The Bloodline was good. They mentioned the matches that weren't represented by SmackDown wrestlers. They did what they needed to do to underline what is going on in the possibility of men's Money in the Bank. And I think having Logan Paul on the show is good. Was there, by the way, did maybe we touched on this earlier to some degree, but was there anything about the Logan Paul content tonight that made you more or less thinking, wherever you stood ahead of time, thinking there's greater chance he wins or less of a chance he wins based specifically on what he said?
No, again, I'm in that situation where I thought he was going to win, basically as soon as the deal with Seth was over at WrestleMania. It was like, they're going to have to get this guy involved again. He'll probably win Money in the Bank. And I was just kind of waiting for it. And then they announced the lineup for Money in the Bank, and the match will be good. Do not get me wrong. But when you look at the competitors in it, it's probably the most underwhelming set of Money in the Bank competitors ever. I mean, I would have to really look at one that was like less star-studded than this. And it's fine. It gives guys opportunities. But as soon as I saw that, I was like, all right, well, how are they going to get Logan Paul involved in this so he can win? As far as his performance tonight, the only thing I did not like, and I cannot stand the guy. Like, I cannot articulate enough how much I cannot stand him as a human being. But the line that he threw at LA Knight that was supposed to be like a gotcha about being a manager and your 20-year career has failed.
I agree.
It makes it seem like he hasn't watched the show in a month. Because
yes.
the guy is getting bigger pops than half the roster, if not 75%. Like, it just came off so out of touch, and I wish he had enough agency to have looked at that, have watched the show, and said, I'm not saying that. It makes me look like an idiot.
I thought it was too insider, that went to, oh, Vince McMahon wanted you to be Maximum L Models manager and not a wrestler. I mean, I guess it's not super meta because that was the act on TV to a degree,
but nobody remembers that.
That's the
nobody
thing. Why?
Cares.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. Yes. You don't want to take someone who's red hot and for a throwaway line, extinguish or reframe them as less than what fans perceive them as. So I didn't like that either. I thought it was bad instincts or bad scripting, whatever it was. I hope there's people in the company who think that was a bad call because it was. Azan's next point. Why do you think Triple H hasn't made a creative change for Butch being Pete Dunne again? I am sort of befuddled by this question because what is Pete Dunne? It's just the name of a guy who was on NXT in the UK indie scene, and it's not a character. This if he goes to AEW, he can be Pete Dunne. He'll fit in there as Pete Dunne. But it's WWE. What is Pete Dunne? What are Vince McMahon and Triple H going to do with Pete Dunne on SmackDown? This is WWE. I mean, like, what is Pete Dunne? I don't. Like, you can not like the Butch gimmick if you want, but to say, oh yeah, put him back in a singlet and call him Pete Dunne and he'll grab people's fingers and snap them and we're supposed to pretend that's some skill he mastered through some years of training, like, that's just silly. Like, Butch is a character. It's a guy who charges the ring and wants to beat people up, and Sheamus and Holland have to hold him back, and he's this bundle of energy, and he's feisty and relentless and dangerous. It's not like the worst sent. It's not like this death sentence given to him. He's not going to be Bryan Danielson if they just let him be himself. Like, he's not. Bryan Danielson exhibited a much better, more marketable overall persona. I would be happy to be proven wrong, but I don't think people rooting for him to be Pete Dunne again are helping his career by trying to push WWE into doing that. Alex, am I way off?
You're not way off, but I actually think he already is Pete Dunne. He's just called Butch. He does wrestle in a singlet and rip at people's fingers. Like, he already does all that.
I know.
The only difference is that he has a different name. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, I don't know. It's one of those situations where I don't think the name change makes that much of a difference. And the thing is he's slotted where he's slotted anyway. Like, the only thing I wish they would do with him is honestly, it'd be nice if he broke away from the Brawling Brutes thing and was by himself and bolstered one of the mid-card divisions or feuded with Gunter or something. But he doesn't have a character, and he's not developing one. He's just Crazy Butch, who in reality is Pete Dunne with a nickname. Like, it's all the same thing to me, so I don't get the clamoring for the old name either, because I think he's technically the same guy.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, no, fair comments. I don't know what people want different other than they think Butch is cartoonish, and I'm like, yes, you're watching WWE. I mean, somebody who's shorter than average without a distinguishing physique is not going to just get pushed because they had good matches in the UK 4 years ago. That's just delusional. that's not the world that WWE exists in.
If turning him into Pete Dunne was going to give him the charisma of LA Knight, then I'd be all for it. But that's not the end game here. And Butch is in a good spot. I mean, the guy's in Money in the Bank. He has no chance of winning, but he'll be in a highlight spot and get to show off what he can do. He gets to pal around with Sheamus, who's a legacy star. Like, I don't know. I don't think he's such a terrible spot that it needs to be changed overnight.
No, I don't either. I don't either. Sorry, Azan. I don't mean to be like harsh on your question, but other people have said that too recently. Also, what do you see next for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn? Do you see a case where KO turns on Sami for still being involved with the Bloodline storyline? Alex, what do you think? I don't know how much you've seen of the stuff with Raw, with KO, you know, blowing his temper, you know, Sami trying to calm KO's snap temper and all that. But it's a ongoing thing. I don't sense that they're building to KO turning on Sami. I think they know that's just been done way, way too much.
Yeah, I have no interest in them turning on each other anytime soon. I would not mind them both being heels and not being a team, but being aligned, because Raw just has no heels. Like, the babyface side of Raw is Sami, Kevin Owens, Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins. You might add Damian Priest to that mix, and your heels are Finn Balor and Dominic and I'm out. Miz, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a huge problem. So they're to the point right now where I would much rather they had a heel champion and Sami and Owens were singles wrestlers vying for that, or, you know, maybe they're heels. I don't know. But I just, them as a team accomplished what it needed to, and I wish they would just amicably split and still be friends without this need to break them up.
Right, yes.
But nope. At this point, though, to me, their partnership has run its course, because they had the big moment of getting back together. They had the bigger moment of winning the titles, and now, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but what team is big enough to beat them, where you look at it and go, oh, well, that shouldn't have happened. They can't just beat two main event guys. Like, I just don't know how you get out of it. Like, I feel like that's where they are right now, is that they're still tag champions, and they did that, and it was, like, great for the moment and for the Bloodline story, but there was no plan for Sami and KO after that. It was a means to an end for the Bloodline, and now they're stuck with this team as tag champions that they don't know what to do with, and it kind of is what it is. But I don't think that the attitude within WWE is, this is what we're going to do with them, and it's going to be great. I just don't think that's the case at all. I think they're as lost as you and I are trying to talk about it.
Yeah. They almost have to put two singles wrestlers together. I mean, maybe they're trying to build up Jinder Mahal's guys. Bronson Reed teaming with someone else. I don't know. Maybe JD McDonagh ends up in the mix. Yeah, I just don't know who the heel pairing would be. That's credible for them. And they're two big stars. Yeah, to be wrapped up in a tag division without a compelling match that we can even conjure up is not good. Finally, number three, if you were at WWE, how far would you go with LA Knight's momentum right now? Want to elaborate on that, Alex?
Till the wheels fall off, I guess. I mean, I wouldn't push him to the moon. I think that's a bad idea. And I'll be honest, he needs he's in a weird spot. He's kind of like Theory, where he needs some credibility boosters. And the thing with Knight is, and I hate to bring up the age thing, but it does matter whether you like it or not. It does matter. He needs some credibility boosters, but you need to be careful by not tearing down other people in the process. And that's why I bring up Theory, because I think that's where they're going. If he was going to stay heel, something against Edge, because he can beat Edge a couple times and gain some credibility for that and then maybe turn face after the fact, that could work. Other than that, I mean, as a face, I don't know what you do with him, because you got Theory, but Theory needs help too. And he cannot work with Reigns. That's not going to work. He can't work with Solo because he can't beat Solo. And so you're kind of stuck in a weird spot where if he's a face, I guess the best thing he can do is beat Karrion Kross 1,000 times. But that doesn't mean anything because everybody else has already done that. So he's in a weird spot. Really good scenario for him would be possibly winning Money in the Bank, staying heel, beating Seth, going over there and feuding with the huge crop of babyfaces they have. I guess that's best case scenario. But I would push it until the crowd gets tired of it without over pushing him. That's, I guess, my best answer to the question.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Anything else in your notes you want to bring up on tonight's show, Alex?
No, not at all.
I'm trying to think. I'm looking at any other segments here, but I think we got it all covered. So yeah, we'll wrap up there. Alex, thanks so much. Give one more plug for your show, and then we'll sign off.
Yeah, you can catch us every week. Usually it shows out Friday or Saturday morning. The 90s Past Cast with myself and the professor, Patrick Moynihan. Patrick's great. He does a great job breaking stuff down. And then
he'll be with me tomorrow night after Collision, by the way, so people can join us on the post show for him co-hosting with me. It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to listen to that, too, and hear Patrick in a different context than talking to me every week. Patrick and Tom Colohue are the two guys that I – simultaneously am envious of, because they get to work with myself and Nick Barbati, and at the same time feel terrible for them because they have to work with myself and Nick Barbati.
yes, well done.
But with that said, no, 90s Past Cast, PW Torch Daily Cast, this week Clash of the Champions 23 with the return of Ric Flair in the ring to WCW, as him and Arn Anderson take on the Hollywood Blondes. And last week's show, really, really good show on King of the Ring 1993. So some cool stuff, and going to get even better as Hulk Hogan has departed from the WWF, and we are about to aboard the Lex Express as he runs for babyface.
Runs for babyface. Well put. Well put. Excellent search, PW Torch, everybody. And thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.